On this week's show, Diagnose the Systems, Not the Symptoms, with Brian Guess from Bartisan Strategic Group. All right, we're back. Nathan Wood, what is up?
Oh, man, I'm excited to nerd out today. It's been a minute.
Yeah, it seems like it's been a minute since we nerded out, although to the people in listener land.
It's every week, right?
Yeah, you've heard us. You just don't know. The secret's out. We actually record at opposite times. That's not a secret anymore. I'm pretty sure I've said that multiple times, especially given all the times I've said, oh, we're just back from so-and-so, and you get it 3 weeks later. I'm breaking the fourth wall. It's fun that way. It's our own little podcast theater. And Brian, you get to join in today.
Happy to be here.
We've been enjoying it. Before we dive into the show, you guys know the deal. Check us out on youtube.com/@thecontechcrew. Follow all of us on social. That's where you find out the most. But also check out that newsletter if you're not checking it out. We got some new stuff coming out soon.
Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the Contech Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@thecontechcrew.com to learn more.
All right. So, Brian, we are connected through a podcast, and so I always like to bring that up. I was a guest a while back on The Gaffer, and you were a guest on The Gaffer, and heard the show and said, I think I want to be on that show. So that's awesome. That is awesome, man. I love that. We hear our podcast forward. I think the more podcasts, the better. I had somebody say that to me recently. Well, I've been on a podcast, so I don't know. I'm like, okay, we all have different listeners. We all enjoy each other. So welcome to the show. Why did you want to be on this show after hearing it?
Well, all right. So are you ready for all the flattery? Is that where we start?
Start with you. And then why the flattery?
Hey, no. I get it. I understand why you wanted to go there. No, for real. So I have a sort of agent, if you will, shout out to James. He's a great dude who helps me sort of with, getting my name out there. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but one of the things you have to do when you're a consultant is make sure that people know that you're out there, right? And so, he convinced me that podcasts are really what great way to go. And I was kind of already drinking the Kool-Aid anyway, big fan of a lot of shows. At that time, I was not aware of the Contech Crew, which is a little bit of a surprise to me now because it's so like right near my sweet spot. But yeah, I got on I'm the Gaffer with Gavin Coyle and recorded that episode maybe a month or so ago. It actually just dropped within the past week. And in preparation for that, because I don't know, I like to do my homework or whatever. And so I listened to 10, 12 episodes and I came across yours, which I thought was super interesting. And I liked not only what you guys were talking about, but kind of your whole je ne sais quoi, Jeff. And so I was like, let me listen to that show. And I started doing that. And when I talked to James again, I was like, James, the show is kind of on my list. Can I talk to Jeff? Can we make that happen? He's like, I'll see what I can do. And ... here we are.
Yeah. See, it can happen.
Well, and so as I do my, 5 minute preparation for these, as I normally do, I go, wait a minute. It sounds like you're doing a lot of this. Yeah. Problem solving stuff, but both for the AEC world and also not for, right? So tell us a little bit about, what is your day job? What do you do?
You're right. I have a lot of clients in the AEC space. And really, that's by extension, because I did a lot of work in the past for commercial building owners. So if we rewind a little bit, 12 of the past 13 years, I worked as a consultant at a company called RSI. They're a building enclosure consultancy. Shout out to RSI. Great people there. Small but mighty company. And so when you work with commercial building owners, that can mean a lot of different things, right? It could be Fortune 500 companies that have a real estate arm. It could be a company that has one or two textile plants in the middle of nowhere, or a manufacturer that's got plants all over. It could be, mixed use, the whole gamut, right? Like, and as a result of working, for those people as their building consultants, kind of having to understand not only like the asset management, financial and strategy piece of it, but also the construction and engineering of it to some degree, I worked with a lot of AEC people, and I did that for 12 years. And where that led me to like what I'm doing now with Bartisan, and the reason that it kind of grew out of AEC somewhat, is what I started to observe when I was managing projects and working on business processes and things of that nature, is that there are patterns that are not construction specific. They're not engineering specific. They're not CRE specific. They're business specific. They're operational. And when I would talk to people and ask questions, just sort of going through, you know, the sort of like the motions and the proper steps of, you know, a particular project, I would find that other people didn't always realize to think of it that way. Like, for example, you got a contractor and he says, I've got X number of crews. And over the past year, I've had a handful of problems that happened. We had jobs where we, you know, kind of lost it a little bit. You know, we had delays, cost overruns, things like that. And when I would hear them describe their problems, it was often, oh, well, you know, this one thing happened, or this technical failure, or this crew walked off because of, you know, something weird going on because they were a sub. And when we would dive deeper, a lot of times we would find out that these things are connected. There's something in the culture. There's something in the way the operations run. And if I'm being really honest with you, I did a lot of like roof and wall inspections and surveys, and ended up giving a lot of free business consulting to people at the price of a roof inspection. And I thought, and so here I am, right? Obviously, when I started Bartisan, I wanted to launch from the point of view of, let me talk to people in commercial real estate, let me talk to people in AEC, because I know the lingua franca. I know what they're thinking about and things like that. But it just kind of grew out from there. Like, so for example, I'm working with a couple software companies right now. I'm working with a small marketing agency that's trying to grow. And it's just like, I continue to be surprised by the parallels across industries. So many problems that we think are technical are often people problems, structure problems, process problems. And that's what I try to help people see.
One follow on, because, you know, there's terminology for this stuff outside of our world, right? Like some call it systems engineering or systems thinking or design thinking or industrial engineering. Like, do you latch onto it, or did you like come across any of those, or you just, it's your own flavor of it that just happens to be similar? Like, yeah, like, what do you say?
That is a beautiful, insightful question. When I'm talking to somebody, I try to speak their language as much as I can, right? So, which is why it was very helpful for me to start with AEC and CERE, because I already had that, a lot of that. But you're right. When I go into a conversation with someone in an industry or sector or function that I haven't done as much work in, I am constantly just trying to drink in all the terminology and learn it. Because let's be real, like, there's jargon, and sometimes jargon exists because it's very specific and useful to a group. And sometimes jargon exists kind of just as a sort of intentional or unintentional kind of gatekeeping of knowledge. And so when I go in and I hear people say these words, I'm like, okay, what's the analog that I already know, right? Because we have to share an understanding to move anything forward, right? And a lot of times I'm able to do that by myself. If it's something highly technical in an industry I haven't worked in, I have a network of subject matter experts that I call on to help do joint delivery or subcontracting. But yeah, you always got to find the shared understanding. Otherwise, you're just talking past each other. You can't really make any progress.
You hit two really cool parts that we can't let go. The first and foremost is, like, I had the same experience coming in the industry from outside, going, you think all of these problems are unique to you, but if you boil them down, not all of them are. In fact, the key majority of them aren't. They're solved in every industry. They're business specific problems. But because the AECO has sort of been treated as a snowflake, they think they're a snowflake. And honestly, every industry has a core, you know, set of things they need to do in business that pretty much match to all industries, right? Everybody has people. So everybody's got HR. Everybody has to have payroll to pay them. Everybody has to have accounting. You know, everybody has to have some sort of leadership or project management or operations. There you go. Like, that's pretty. And so talk about how that, boiling that down, has showed, what are some of the commonalities, no matter where you go, that I think AECO should understand is pretty much just business, and like, stop calling yourself a snowflake.
Let's not start with operations, but let's start with projects, right? all sorts of businesses have operations and projects, right? But the form that projects take sometimes is a little more different depending on the nature of the business and the nature of the project, right? So you might have an internal project, we're building a new line at a, you know, to upgrade something at a manufacturing place, or we're changing over some piece of software, or we could have like external projects. And that really, that's the world of contracting, right? The majority of our quote unquote operations, our revenue generating operations, that is, really are projectized. And so when you look at projects, what's the shape of a project, right? You've got scope, you've got time, you've got quality. You might have, depending on your industry, different phases and things like that. But like project management is an industry agnostic discipline. And the reason for that is because it is a useful set of practices and ideals, right? So when I go into a place and I'm looking for something common, it's like, okay, do you have somebody here do you have PMs? If you're running multiple projects, are you having senior PMs? Is this an internal project, an external project? Who's the client? Where's the funding and how is it phased? You can map these onto general processes that exist when they're in place, right? So how does that look in terms of problems you could find, okay? So when I go in and I'm trying to find what's really going on, I start with a handful of really quick diagnostic questions, right? So it's like, what's the financials for this project, right? Who's paying for it? Internal, external, how's it being accounted for? How much has been spent so far? What's left? Do we have contingencies? I'm going to get me started on contingencies in construction.
Parking lot. Keep going.
Yeah, we'll come back to that one maybe. You know, do we have contingencies, things like that? Then next is like accountability and authority, right? Who's in charge of what? And you guys know this very well in construction. That can get very, very interesting, right? So like when I used to be a consultant for commercial building owners, right? They might have their own PMs or their own asset managers, right? But then you've got the people doing the building, you've got the people doing the engineering, you've got the people doing the architecture. And it's this sort of like fractured system that needs to connect at places and times. And tracing the authority across organizations is a thing that a lot of companies don't do that well. And a lot of things can fall in the cracks there, whether it's like where details meet, something really, really practical and building, or whether it's, information, dates, when's the AIA payment pay app due, and who's got to sign off of it with different parties, right? So accountability and authority is a big part of it. And those breakdowns and those misalignments are huge and probably the most common, the most prevalent ones across organizations. But then from there, it's like, okay, what's the chronology, right? What choices led us to this moment so that we can figure out where we can go from here? What things have we tried to get to this point? What options do we think are left? And then how does this fit into sort of like the overall strategy, either for our organization and or the organization we're delivering for? And when I run that set of questions as a diagnostic, I find a number of different patterns. The big one, the big category is almost always around authority and accountability. That's where the most gaps are, especially when you have multi-trade issues, right? But there are others. That's predominantly it though. It's, you know, people are always wanting to talk about they're wanting to talk about process improvement, right? And they think, oh, that's, we got to get new software. We got to get new, we got to change the database. We got to do something to get these marginal efficiencies. But disproportionately, the valuable problems around processes are people problems. And like you said earlier, we all got people, right? We all got people in our organization. And those structures and the incentives that sort of emerge from them, that's where a lot of really valuable problems come from. The trick is getting people to see that and not just thinking this is an issue that we can throw more bodies or money on to solve it, right?
Or technology at it.
Yeah. Or technology. Ooh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That's my favorite. Well, you know. All right. Let's just slap it on there.
Let me set the scenario for you then, Brian, because I think you hold more of, you as you explained, the owner's project manager perspective, which is usually most of our audience, like who we wish we could talk to. So with that hat on, and the fact that you're saying, yeah, our biggest problem is the exchange point between what we call stakeholders, the general contractors, the trades, the architects, the engineers, and more often than not, what software, other things have been sold to owners is, oh, well, if you just pick a software and make everybody use that software, then everything is solved. But it's not, right?
It's not.
the GC is still going to have to use theirs and the trade's going to have to use theirs. It's like, how often are you encountering that? Like, what's your diagnosis? It doesn't seem like anybody has an answer to it yet. So I don't know. Can you enlighten us?
I'll try to approach that from two different angles. I was actually having a conversation with my former employers. I was over at their office just yesterday or the day before having a conversation about this. So you pick a piece of software, right? And this is going to help you internally with your admin, let's say, right? And that's going to gain some efficiencies for you. Okay. Thing number one, change management. How big is your organization, right? Do you have to roll out this software in multiple waves? How do you make sure that it's adopted? How do you make sure that like old habits that would die hard are having a more graceful transition, right? And then let's say you get it all rolled out and it's beautiful. What happens when you got to talk to somebody outside of your organization? And here's the conversation I was having with them yesterday. Their client said to them, I don't want to, so they do a lot with roofs, right? I don't want to report leaks through your app. Every single vendor, consultants really don't like to be called vendors, by the way, partners, that's what we want to be. I don't want to report leaks through your app. Every single vendor I have has their own damn app and I'm tired of it, right? So you can do your best to fix things internally with your own app. Maybe it will work. Maybe it won't. There's a lot of factors that go into that. But then the moment you've got to interact with somebody else, it still becomes fractured, right? And in some ways, I pine for the days when we just picked up the phone and sent an email or sent a text. Fine. That's fine. Like, why do I need your iPhone app to get a message to you, right? It's a big cluster of problems. And it is both. So the two points of view are the internal point of view doesn't solve that, and the external point of view where you're communicating across organizations. And it is a tough problem. A lot of people are working to try to solve these things. A lot of people are doing not great jobs, in my opinion. But the software that you apply is only going to be as good as you can use it and those that you interact with can use it. Software is not a magic bullet. It's not. Probably that might make some people mad at me saying that. So I'm sorry. But
they've heard us say it quite a few times.
Well, I mean, and I like your point too. Yeah, go ahead. Keep going.
Oh, I was just going to say, this is the Contact Crew podcast. Like, we love technology, right? But it's got to be, you know, we need to solve a problem with technology, not create technology and look for a problem to solve.
Yeah. Well, and I want to go to that exact example that you said of that conversation with an internal app versus an external app. And a lot of people listening and going, see, that's why I don't do anything. So I'm just not going to do it. Screw it. That's not what we're saying is you're actually, that internal app is still seriously valuable to the company. You've done a great job. You did it for a reason. It means you're going to have to now approach the external communications in a different way. So how do you do that? You know, and that's what I don't want people to hear is it's like, okay, so there's another stepping stone to this or stumbling block, but you don't not do it either.
Correct. So, correct. You can't use the challenge as a sort of excuse not to solve the problem, right? You know, these problems are valuable and they do matter, right? So it's your mindset as you approach these problems is going to be very important. But no, don't use it as an excuse not to move the needle.
Well, I mean, I just think about the concept of, I mean, OAuth or this like sign in with X, right? Of like, you know, everyone's got their own app and like how far, you know, I pine for the days where any trade contractor in what, you know, PM system they want to use is going to, you know, submit through their system and it just, you know, APIs or whatever, send it off on its way. But there's a lot of things, as you said before, the governance and the rules and the accountability and all this human stuff of like how we want to do it. Like we don't have those conversations. And so therefore we can't move forward with the technology side of it, right? And so, I mean, I guess how much of your job, like, are you able to convince folks to spend the time to figure that, like, is that essentially your job? Or are they just helping you solve it for them?
No, that is a big part of it. So like, thing number one is when I do get called in, and let's assume it's not being called in on an emergency basis, because that is something that happens disproportionately. But when I'm getting called in, it's like, we think we have a problem. Okay, what do you think that problem is? Tell me in your own words, right? And a lot of times what happens is people have already prescribed a solution, right? We have this problem. And so we want you to help us implement X, whether X is software, whether X is reconfiguring a department or something like that. And I'm like, I hear you. That sounds great. But why X? Why have you come to that solution? If that's the thing, why do you need me? I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to talk myself out of a job, but I want to make sure that we're doing the right thing, right? So yeah, somebody will come in, they'll say, or they'll bring me in, they'll say, all right, here's a problem. Here's what we want you to do. And I say, let's just take a step back and make sure that that is in fact actually the problem, right? Like, so let's make something up. Oh, our sales team is underperforming. We found out that, you know, they're dropping the ball, like a certain percentage of sales are falling out at this part of the pipeline. So we want to create some content, or we want to create a tracking app or something to make sure that right there, we don't have that problem. And it's like, okay. So we're losing things there. We want to put the Band-Aid there, right? But why are we losing things there, right? Like, why, right? Is it because, maybe the sales team has people who are skilled in these three areas and not that? Maybe you don't have as much, you don't have as many, like, say, closers, right? Or maybe it's really not that specific place in the pipeline. It's just that specific place in inbound, right? Like, let's make sure we really, really understand the shape of the problem, the things that lead into it, so that the solution that we design is apt, right? It's going to be successful. And so it's not like I want to tell my clients, oh, you've got it wrong from the beginning. That would make me kind of an asshole. But what it means is, like, let's make sure, like I was saying before, that we all have a shared understanding of what the thing is. And so to get to your question, Nathan, yes, a lot of times it's me trying to figure that out. And sometimes we have to take a little bit of time up front to really, really diagnose it, right? Like, let's talk to the right people, the right stakeholders within and without, if necessary, so that we can really understand what is actually the breakdown.
I absolutely love that, because I'll go to the marketing side, right? Like, I've done a lot of time on the marketing side. I've had to learn a lot over the years, and they love that funnel thing, right? And
They
drop out here and we've got to go get content because that's what we're focused on. And it's really hard, but you'll get into a diagnostic and say, like, honestly, this is probably the point at which the rubber hit the road. They never should have been in the funnel. Like, they never should. The checks and balances should have been up higher, not here. This is the first time knowledgeable people are getting involved on both sides, and you're attracting people because your messaging up front, way up front, is attracting the wrong types of people, you know? And boy, does that really ruffles feathers, because, well, funnel size is the marketing's, you know, it's their KPI, right?
It's their KPI.
Show me how I'm measured, and I'll show you how I act. I know I get it wrong, Nathan,
close
but
enough.
I love to. It's close enough. It really is a value of saying, hey, maybe this is just the point in which we're figuring something out. And how many times that this is tough, man, because how many times you come across people that just, I get this all the time. They're like, I don't need to go through your phases when I was a consultant. I just want to get to here. I had to let go and refuse three clients at a time I needed those clients, when I knew from the signals on the calls with them that wasn't going to happen. Have you figured out how to get through that? Or is that just part of your funnel of, like, oh, not a good fit, I'm out?
I try to be as upfront with people as early as possible. So, like, let's say I have an upfront meeting, a discovery call. I don't really love the term, but I tell people at the beginning of it, I was like, we're going to spend 30 minutes to an hour. And at the end of that, I'm going to tell you whether I think that I can help you. And if I can't, I'm going to tell you whether I know someone who can, but I'm going to leave you with whatever point of view and perspectives, and, like, hopefully something actionable that you can take, even if we never do business together, right? And I sort of, like, try to plant that kind of seed, you know, gracefully, but, like, I try to plant that as upfront and as often as possible, so that people aren't blindsided if I just say, look, we need to walk away. I can't do this. I'll give you an example of a place, though, where I, like, just absolutely just turn people down at the beginning. And that's when someone comes to me and they say, it's a big enough organization and they need to downsize, right? If somebody's like, we have this problem and we need to downsize, I turn that away carte blanche. And the reason for that is because if you've gotten to the point where you think that the only solution is downsizing, you did something poor, like really, really poor strategy up front. And I'm not going to be the guy responsible for holding your hand through the process of you telling all these people that you screwed up and now that their livelihood's at stake, right? But, you know, it is a tug of war, right? How do you fire a client or not accept a client when you need it? It's a tough thing, right? And how do you not trick yourself into saying, oh, they'll be the right kind of client. We just got to get through these hiccups. And as a sort of analogy, coming back to the KPIs of marketing, right? It's very easy for people to trick themselves into things, right? Like I kind of think of like every rule or every KPI as a sort of game that can be played. And what do we do when we play games? We try to win, right? There's an incentive structure. And so the incentive structure for someone who's trying to go out and get clients is I want clients and I need X number of leads. X number of leads is going to convert to X number of sales. I need to do that. And for marketing, when people are looking at their funnel, it's the same thing. I am judged by the content, by the raw numbers of this funnel. And if that's the case, they're not incentivized to filter down like the signal to noise ratio and get the highest quality leads. They're often incentivized to get the most leads at each stage. You follow what I'm saying? And these kind of structures are a big part of where a lot of problems come from, right? If I'm helping somebody work through optimizing some sort of process or reconfiguring some sort of system, we have to talk about the metrics. If we don't talk about the metrics and especially the ways that they can break down or create sort of like counterproductive incentives, then we're not really evaluating things.
Well, and let's ground this back in our industry, because I, as you work with, again, commercial owners in construction, I think that the breakdown so often, I'm sure a lot of them come to you and say, hey, I've got this issue with XYZ of data. I want some dashboard. I don't know. They want to see something or they think some technology is going to fix it, right? But really what they're lacking is the incentives and the accountability and the process of how they're going to work with all of their third-party contractors and designers. And that's going to take changing contracts, which means now you got to talk to legal. It starts to grow and it snowballs, right? And so like, how do you navigate? But like, do a lot of them just realize how much work it is and just stop? or do you help them? Like, yeah, realize how big it is and help them through it? Like, yeah, if that comes up, what's your strategy?
Yeah, it is a lot of work. And sometimes it's uncertain work. You know, there's maybe not... there's not clarity on their part as to what the conclusion of that work might be, which is why it's so important to try to figure things out up front. It's a tricky thing, right? If you say, oh, I have these breakdowns in my company. All right, so we'll keep it in commercial real estate and or AEC. You know, we have this huge project going on right now. Let's say we're building like, it's a very common, like a hospital adjacent, like medical offices building and a parking garage, right? This isn't really a project. It's a program, right? You could call it maybe a mega project. Right?
Multiple point is, owners, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so it's like, all right, we have this series of cascading failures on, let's say, time, just because timeline is a very common one, right? You know, we've got somebody, you know, they can't do, I don't know, some sort of fireproofing because we've still got to do, I don't know, stud walls or pouring or something like that, right? And it has this ripple effect, these like sort of cascading consequences to a timeline for a project that's already super huge, right? And that a lot of people impacted by that. And so when people are going in, they say, all right, what went wrong here, right? You've got your superintendent or you've got your like someone at the GC or something. What went wrong here? Okay, these guys didn't meet schedule. Okay, that's great. What do we do about that? Like that's done now, right? Like the question is, how do we keep these things from happening, right? Do we have sufficient buffers? Do we have sufficient like rain days built in? Do we have sufficient resources, whether they be personnel or equipment or what have you, to accommodate these things? And there's a lot of approaches that you can take, just depends on the job, right? But going and saying, oh, here's this single point of failure that caused all these other things doesn't really do a lot of good after the fact, you know, if you're not going to be improving something from there.
Yeah, I like that, because if you look at that exact example, right, that's a program, you said it, and we do treat it like a project, and then all three go downhill together because we're tying those projects as one when they're really programs and each one is operating differently, should have different maps of accountability and authority. And what's interesting about what you said from the beginning, go back to that, like, as a commercial owner, if you understand and can map out that accountability versus authority and have that framework can be applied to job after job after job and can be used to create momentum in order to understand, hey, like, who was accountable for that time delay, but who had the and who has the authority to solve it and stay ahead of it? And maybe it was our, you know, communications method, our decision-making process, et cetera, that caused it, right? Like, the fireproofing wasn't there, but that's because the communication process to let the framing crew knew that they were free to go because the pour was done was delayed, right? Because they didn't know who could then have these complicated maps. And if you have one person looking at that program or over that program as you would in a common project structure, you're going to get killed. And we just don't approach it that way. And we don't believe it's repeatable, but it is repeatable.
That's the thing. And so much of this is a mindset thing, especially, all right, so you look at AEC, right? And we think about, all right, what are the particulars of this project? We got, like, what are the constraints? How do we design for them? How do we build them? It's a unique creation when it's all said and done. And yeah, that's true. It is going to have its particulars, right? But there are so many components, whether they be physical built systems or like project systems, people systems, there are so many parts of those things that are reusable from project to project. And the whole concept of like lessons learned wouldn't exist if we couldn't improve and we couldn't carry things from one job to another. What happens is we forget things. We don't really do lessons learned or postmortems really well. In some cases, we miss out on a lot of the reusability, like the knowledge from one job to another. You know, there will be some things that stick, and the more that you repeat them, the more they'll stick. But it's such a, you know, it's like a sieve, right? Like, it's only going to catch, like, so only so much of that knowledge sticks from job to job or phase to phase. And that's a real problem that a lot of us can work on. And actually, going back to something that I think it was Nathan said a little earlier, he was like, you know, sometimes people want a dashboard. This is a great example of, there might be somebody who would be in a position like this who's like, oh man, if I just had the perfect dashboard, this whole problem will be solved. But the tool is only so great as the one using it or the team using it, right? So yeah. Look, hey, again, this is the Contact Crew podcast. We love tech, right? Like, I love a good dashboard, man. Like, I used to build them for fun for projects in like Python or something like that. It's cool. But if you don't use it and it's not integrated in all the places that it needs to be, it's just like getting a report that sits on your desk, right? I was talking to, just as a quick aside, I was talking to an executive recently. Their predecessor used to spend a significant amount of sort of like their own time and resources producing this quarterly report to kind of hand out to the whole top level team for their quarterly meetings. So this person came in and they wanted to make sure that they kept that going for the sake of continuity, because some things were going to change as they came in and sort of like, you know, just the dynamic changed a little bit because it's a new person. So they faithfully made this thing for, I don't know, a year maybe. And then at one point they were like, man, this is a lot of work. I wonder what would happen if I didn't do it once. And they didn't. And not a soul asked for it. You know what? So it could be the same thing where you could have a brilliant dashboard. How are you using it? You know, it's like any other tool.
It is. It's funny because I've seen pretty dashboards that if you really ask them, like, so when was the last time that really made a change in your decision-making process or really caught something or you really did something with it? It was like, ooh, I don't know that I can answer that question. Well, then it's really just a cool piece of tech and I'm with you, right? Wow.
It's a warm blankie is what it is.
Yes, right? It's something I can put my head on. Like, I agree. I fully agree. And it's it goes to, you know, the read-in of the show, right? It's, we are so afraid to, because when our audience hears systems, they do think the technology. But what you're talking about when you hear systems, when you talk about systems and symptoms, you're talking about the business systems and the symptoms that they create. So to go to your schedule, the symptom is the schedule slipped. The system is, how did we get there? And then if we diagnose the systems, the beauty is there is a reason why you think technology when you think systems, because if done correctly and you look at the symptoms and you diagnose the symptoms to get to the systematic problem, then you can apply good technology systems, technology to solve those problems, meaning early indicators, meaning decision-making, making sure you have access to the actual data you need to continually do this and follow the process, right? And that's people, process, technology. But I love the way that you're approaching it in a systems, from a systems perspective.
You know, the thing is, people don't realize every set of interconnected things, whether it's people or technology or whatever, is a system. The question is, did you design it to be that way? Because systems will just coalesce. You know what I mean? Like if the three of us routinely went out on Friday evening to, I don't know, to grab a drink or a meal or something like that, right? Like that is a sort of like social system, right? And it will manifest a certain set of behaviors as a result of that, right? And let's say we coordinated that via, it's Brian's responsibility. Brian's going to call both of you guys, and that's how we do things, right? Now, that might have not felt like a really formalized system, but it is a system. And what happens when we invite three more people, but like Brian gets sick that week? Well, now how's the coordination work, right? It's got to change, right? Like that's a system. Many, many, many clusters of things can be systems. Question is, did you make it to be the way that you wanted to be? Is it working for you? You know? And a lot of people don't think about that. We have more ad hoc systems in our families, in our relationships, and in our offices than we realize in a lot of cases.
Oh, and go deeper to hit us, AECO, on our crews, in our crews, within our company, within our teams. We have all of that. And there is so much ad hoc. Like, it's what makes going from crew to crew as a laborer, if you're an electrician and you're going from crew to crew, if you're a steam fitter or a pipe fitter and you're going from crew to crew, and it's always different because those systems are the interconnected. Oh, well, like we don't look at, you know, XYZ app to know if we should go. Amy texts everybody in the morning. Oh, you're not on the text chain because you're new. Sorry. Like, but there's a techno. Oh, no. Yeah. So I love it. It's getting down to the root issue.
And back to, even though it's easier for people to text, that's why everyone has their app, because they want a dashboard that ultimately should be a representation of the measurements of how effective your systems are. If you don't have any systems, a dashboard ain't going to tell you anything, because nobody's going to be putting anything in the dashboard. Total full circle.
It's communication, right? Like, you know, I was harping on authority, and authority is a certain like structure of communication, but just communication in general, like that is the system or systems that often breaks down the most. You know, I used to work for a company, fantastic company, but like one of the things that was very confusing for me as a person who would spend a lot of time in the field, but also like a close to equal time in the office, is like, where am I getting my information from? Like we had email, we had Microsoft Teams, we all had phones, right? And somebody would be like, oh, I Teamsed you a thing. I was hoping you could get back to me that day. I'm like, brother, I was on a roof all day. Like I didn't check Teams. Like you could call me or something, you know? And it's not about like, was I right or was I wrong in that situation? It's like we had three or four different pieces of technology, any of which could have been a channel for that particular instance of communication, but there wasn't really clarity around which one you use for what and why, right? And so that's a system of systems. That's a problem as a result of just the tools we had available, so to speak.
Oh, that is a major business problem. That goes so far beyond the AECO industry. And just, I can connect that back to that exact statement is so true and so common, especially as we've grown up through these different iterations of those technologies. So start back in the day, it was phones. We still have people in our business who were phones only. That's all that existed, and fax machines. And then email came along and they got really stoked on email and they did email for a really long time. And then Slack entered the world or text message entered the world. And it was, and then Slack entered the world. And now in a single organization, you have that layered cake and you come into the layer and you don't know. And a lot of it is it's all there. So again, this is this like layer cake that you're like, which one do I use with this person? And you'll get that, man. Like I have experienced this so many times. You're like, in a personal world, I'm Teamsing somebody, nothing. Email, bam, I get an answer. Okay, I had to learn that one the hard way. And you know, certain people Slack me, don't call me, don't email me. And you're like, what is it? And this is just a business problem as a whole.
It is a business problem for people that use these softwares, but it's also I don't know if I want to call it a business problem. It is a technical problem from the people that create these softwares. So if I can go on like a little bit of a pet peeve is like the scope creep of software. Like some people use Slack like a project management information system. And if you can do that, that's great. Slack has a lot of features that can support that, even though it wasn't originally billed as that, right? And so there are so many things that get tacked on, especially in the SaaS world, right? The software as a service, like whether it's construction related or not, we add a feature, so you can do more with this thing than you're used to. And it's like, man, how many things should I be doing in Zoom? Should Zoom be writing my emails right now? Like, yeah, I thought Zoom was for calls, but they added AI to it. And so now it can take notes. And if it can take notes, well, it can summarize those notes. And well, it might as well just send the email to people. I don't know. You know, I'm not so old as to have like lived through the Unix philosophy era of like computing and things, but I do understand it. And the idea that like each tool should do a single thing really well was part of that ethos. And there are some times where I feel older than I am because I'm just like, damn it, I wish this thing would just do the one thing, Copilot, and every single piece of Microsoft Office is just too much for me.
We're probably going to get canceled because I never say it. But do you mean the Microsoftification of everything? It's like, there's Slack. Now we have Teams. Well, Teams was actually Zoom because Zoom was Zoom. So Teams was Zoom. And then Slack was Slack, so Teams became Slack. So now Teams is Teams, Zoom, and Slack. And we've built a button into Outlook because Outlook is still there to share it into Teams or share it into Slack or share it into there or put it into here. And stop. Freeze.
I'm sorry, IT guys. That's the power of choice. That ain't going away.
Stop. Collaborate and listen.
Teams need to decide which one they're going to use, but there is always going to be infinite choice. And that is a world that we just have to accept.
I don't agree, actually. I don't agree because if lanes were maintained in such a way that the tools continued to be the most exceptional at what they do and learned how to cross the boundaries into other places, we wouldn't be in this place. Because I will tell you right now that Slack's ethos was the ability to facilitate fantastic communication between project teams. It was not meant to be a project management software. And Brian, I have built it for it at times for people. So I am guilty of doing, hey, here's a SOP on creating a Slack channel for a project. And then by the way, here's how do you connect your Google Drive to it. Here's how you connect these things to it. And here's how it becomes your project PMIS system. Should not be that. And I am guilty of it. So I agree with you there, Nathan. But if Slack stayed Slack and Microsoft stayed Microsoft and they just went together, Slack could continue to be incredible at what it does. Now, I also understand that like this is a world of it's not about choice. It's about cash. Let's be honest. It's about owning the market. It's about getting more out of your product. But Teams, whoever built it, at least the current version of it, doesn't understand what Slack understood. And vice versa, because Slack's tried to get into that world and it doesn't understand it either. So, and I'm not bagging on either. If you want to be everything to everybody, you're nothing to nobody in the end. You're a mishmash. So, and I, you know, take it for what it is. You know, that's, I see that in construction software too, Ryan. I see it consistently across the board. And I, again, when I was out on my own, I tried to teach construction software companies that, look, defending your space, maintaining and defending your space and your absolute ownership of the understanding of how it works is far more important than trying to add on all those other features, because that's the other thing you get is in scope creep, you get more to do with the same amount of programmers because you're not going out to get more. Sure, we can talk about how AI is doing it, but then you'll just put out much more crap code and then you can go out and do that. So there is a level of, you kind of got to do it in as a contractor, right? Like, can you take all 12 of those scopes? Probably. Should you? Probably not, because six of them are probably A, not in your wheelhouse, and you're not going to make as much money off of them. They're not as profitable to you. And B, you don't really have the people power to support it in the time in which you're going to need it, because you're not analyzing it. So that's that. I mean, man, you put me on a soapbox.
We made almost the entire episode without talking about AI, Jeff. We went almost an entire episode without
saying AI. We're not talking about it. I just said
We don't have time.
We don't have time. But I do think our system should be, the three of us should go out for drinks, food, whatever, and start this system, invite other people, because we could go on for hours. So, Brian, man, like, any final thoughts for folks out there that are, you know, given your space and what you're consulting on and helping people with, like, what should they be thinking about right now? And give them a little sage advice.
All right. So for me, it's all about being open to questions, right? Being open to possibility that you might be wrong. And so if you are experiencing operational setbacks or project problems, if you think you've figured out what that problem is and you find that it rears its head in the same way or manifests itself slightly different, maybe you need to be asking yourself, is there a deeper problem, right? So if you have these repeat problems, try to connect them to other things within your system, right? Try to figure out the people, how does it fit into the org chart? How does it fit into, say, your production process? And just try to map it out and see if you can find, you know, whether it is in fact a single point of failure right here where you see it, right? Or if there's something upstream or adjacent to it that's actually contributing to that problem. And if you need help looking at that, you can give me a call.
And where can they give you a call, Brian? How can they get in touch with you?
I'll tell you what, you can go to my website. That is bartizan.group. That's BARTIZAN. Or you can find me on LinkedIn. Either way, you will see a button to book a call with me, and I'd be happy to help you figure some stuff out.
Well, I hope people out there listening do click that button. Do go find you, because I think they're going to valuably find, if they're open, if you're asking yourself, if you're open to, you might be a part of the problem, or just, again, it's not a problem. It's an opportunity for improvement. None of us are perfect, right? That's the thing, is the problem may exist in your organization, but that doesn't mean there's a problem with your organization. It just means you have an opportunity for continuous improvement. So reach out to Brian and work on those problems, because the person you might help, the company you might help, is yourself. And that's what we want in the end. So thanks, man, for sitting down. Nathan, I knew you'd like this one.
Oh, man. Yeah, this was a lot of fun. We got to have you back, Brian, for sure.
Truly appreciate it, guys.
And we thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Brian Guest. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to the show, visit thecontentcrew.com. This is The Content Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.